Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Today's show is brought to you by Hearst Ranch Grass-Fed Beef, available on the internet at HearstRanch.com.
And welcome. This is Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your guest host for today, Isabella Wojcik, with the James Beard Foundation. And I'm thrilled to have today as my guest, Brad Farmery, Executive Chef with Avroco Hospitality Group. We'll get to him in a second, but I want to make sure you know that we are recording live right now. You can absolutely call in with your questions to 718-497-2128. You can also email questions from 11 to 11:30. To info@heritageradionetwork.com, and forevermore after, you can always catch this episode. Thank you, Brad, for being here. Really appreciate it, and welcome to the show.
Woo-hoo. Good to be here.
Today's topic is simply called Bloody Delicious. So I hope that already sets the tone for it's going to be an interesting, provocative, evocative kind of a conversation. I'm sorry it's not a cooking show where we can show you all sorts of delicious things cooking, because Brad is certainly a very talented chef. And we're fortunate to being here in New York City to have him working here. He is chef owner, part of this hospitality group that is renowned for not only the design, but also the hospitality, the service, and certainly outstanding food at Public Restaurant on Elizabeth Street in Nolita, and Saxon and Pearl on Bowery, which is now becoming a hot neighborhood. So you had a good nose for that. Along with Gin Joints Madame Geneva, which is at Saxon and Pearl, and now the just launched The Daily, which is in connection with the Public, kind of an awesome place where every day something new is happening, new food, new cocktails. Brad, let's get to the meat of things, or the heart of things, or the blood of things, as it were. You have developed this reputation for working with blood, both in food and certainly in writing about it. And not only are you a great chef, but now I'm reading that you're also a wonderful author. And you penned this great article, very informative, in last summer's Food Arts, that kind of encompassed everything a food professional and a food enthusiast would want to know to be informed on the topic. So let's get started with that. This article came out last summer, so 2011. And how long have you been cooking with blood? How long did you come to be known as, the blood guy, blood chef?
When I first moved to England is when I sort of fell in love with some of the style of cooking. It just seemed so old school. Mm-hmm. I loved making terrines. I loved charcuterie and everything that went along with it. But I love the fact that, especially in Europe, this cooking is very apparent and still, up to date. It's not antiquated. It's just really an interesting ingredient that I'd never used before. And so, almost every restaurant I worked in had some kind of dish that used blood as an ingredient. And so, coming back to America, I just wondered why no one here was doing that. So I wanted to kind of bring some of this education that I had gotten in England, which was definitely my formative cooking years, and offer something different to the people of Nolita.
And that you are. So let's talk about that. You were in England probably for around 7 years.
Yep.
You studied there. You're from Pittsburgh originally. I know your mom was a great cook. Did she ever embark on sausage making or blood sausages or anything of that nature?
Oh, God, no.
Can you imagine?
That's the furthest from what Linda Farmery was cooking.
So then you come back to New York. Public opens in 2003. And at what point did you start to think about, introducing these kinds of cooking techniques, working with blood, to the kitchen? Was it shortly thereafter, or did something, happen to spark your memory about that time in London?
No, I think from the get-go, we wanted to offer people a point of difference. So we wanted to do game and unusual organ meat, but also vegan and vegetarian food. We didn't want chicken on the menu. We didn't want salmon. There's never been steak on the menu. We always wanted to offer something that people couldn't get somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And I think with these ingredients that we were using, I think we always strove to do them at such a high level, because I think selling something like blood or selling kidneys or even selling vegan food is difficult. It's a huge hurdle. So I think we want people not just to order it, but to enjoy it and to talk about it and get excited about coming back and getting that same dish.
So how difficult is it to work with blood? What's the process like?
Well, I think obtaining it is sometimes the first hurdle. And okay. I think it's, that a lot of chefs have called me and say, you know, where can I get it? And then what do I do with it? And I think, I think almost every purveyor can access it, meat purveyors especially. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, once you understand the logistics and the kind of the chemical makeup of blood, it becomes a lot easier. And that's one of the things I dealt with in the Food Arts article. I think understanding that the proteins in blood are very similar to eggs, albumin. Mm-hmm. Once you understand that and you understand how you cook eggs, all of a sudden you can sort of put two and two together and make a sausage. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's sort of that slow cooking that will make a really delicate texture. And I think that, just like many ingredients, blood's mishandled often, and people just think, okay, it's a throwaway ingredient, so I'll just quickly throw something together. But I think if people really take pride in it and, mm-hmm. and do some research, I think that there can be amazing dishes that come out of it.
So how do you receive it when it's delivered? Is it like a plasma bag from the hospital? Like, what does it look like? I can't even imagine.
Well, normally it comes in these sort of insane looking frozen milk jugs. So it's bulging crimson milk jugs. But I believe it or not, I have gotten deliveries when it's been in medical bags, which freaks people out.
Wow.
Know?
Yeah. Okay.
So usually if you're getting something like pig or cow's blood, mm-hmm. it comes in the milk jugs. But when you look for something more obscure like rabbit, sometimes it comes in the more obscure containers.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I shudder to think that that bag was on its way somewhere else and it inadvertently ended up in your kitchen.
Diverted to Chef Farmery.
So you get this blood, so if it's frozen, mm-hmm. You're storing it frozen, you need to thaw it, presumably, yeah. in order to use it. What are some of the ways that you're using it or you have used it in the past on your menus? I mean, let's talk about kind of the diverse range of dishes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, we like to really highlight it. And I think probably the most socially acceptable way to eat it is sausages, mm-hmm. and we do a wide variety from boudin noir to black pudding or morcilla. But we also like to use it as a thickening agent in soups and stews, which again is traditional to Europe and Eastern Europe. We do a foie gras torchon that has a cocoa and blood sauce with it. And that richness mm-hmm. Kind of mirrors the richness of the foie gras. So you're taking something that essentially is the lowest of the low ingredient and pairing it with the most expensive, which I think always is that cool dichotomy in food.
Well, and it's certainly taboo. If you talk about lowest of the low, I could even say, in some cultures, it's certainly not something that's welcomed for consumption, for celebration. But we'll get to that in a second. So you mentioned different types of sausages. How are these sausages made? What's the component besides blood that would go into these sausages? Is it meat? Is it stuffing? What is it?
Well, I think the main sort of foundation of any of these blood sausages around the world are always blood, fat, mm-hmm. and filler. And so because blood has zero fat in it, and sausages need between 40 and 60% fat, that always has to be added, or you're going to get something very crumbly and dry mm-hmm. and not the least bit delicious. And filler. So the filler from around the world, in England, they use a lot of oats. In Spain, they use rice. France, they'll use apples, onions, sometimes cream, mm-hmm. All the way to Korea, where it's kimchi and glass noodles, which I think also shows that beautiful, it's a vehicle for local interpretation. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a very affordable commodity ingredient that then can take the flavors of that region or that country and present it in an interesting mm-hmm. way, which is why I love it.
So when I know that you have traveled extensively, when you traveled, were you seeking out kind of, what's authentic, what's regional, maybe what's indigenous to that part of wherever you were? And then were you curious, if blood plays any part, or did you kind of stumble upon it? Like, I know you mentioned Vietnamese or Korean with the kimchi. Mm-hmm. Is it, how did you come upon that?
Yeah, I think I've always been looking for the really, I know that a lot of chefs do it, but they want to see what people are eating and what's mm-hmm. the street food and what's someone's grandmother cooking them for breakfast. And I think by searching that out, I think that I found so many of these cool dishes and saw that thread that works for the most part around the world, with exceptions of the Middle East and, unfortunately, America. but I think, you know, these traditional cultures all had use for it, because, you know, if you look at, again, it makes up almost 5% of an animal's weight. And so, you know, just the sheer wastefulness of seeing this ingredient go down the drain just is unusual. But I shouldn't say unusual, it's unfortunate.
Right.
But yeah, by traveling and seeing how other people were using it inspired me to really look deeply into this subject and see how else I could present it.
Mm-hmm. So I just want to remind listeners that we are Taste Matters. I'm your guest host, and my guest today is Brad Farmery with Public and Saxon and Pearl here in New York City. Feel free, please, to call in at 718-497-2128 or email your questions to info@heritageradionetwork.com. Brad, let's talk a little bit about taste memories. You had mentioned, you know, you had this experience in London and you were kind of looking for that here. What is the taste exactly that draws you in? What is that? And do you find that blood taste to be true in other kinds of dishes? I saw blood tofu, which I had actually in a Chinese kind of porridge dish. I'm from Poland, so I grew up eating sausage. And the buckwheat is the flavor more than the blood that I kind of comforts me and I remember. But what is the flavor like for you that I don't know, is it unified? Is it true for all these dishes, or is it just different? Kind of, can you evoke some thoughts about flavor for us?
Sure. I think also it's interesting. It is a taste memory, but it's also, I guess it's an homage to sort of historical cooking that I also appreciate, you know, and I think that, you know, making sure that these techniques and these ingredients don't just go by the wayside because they've fallen out of favor. But flavor, yeah, it's a definite richness. I know that it's probably weird, but it's high in iron, so there's a slight, almost metallic tinge to it, but not in a bad way. I know that sounds strange. And I think that every blood that I've used has a different flavor to it. Pig is very different from cow. The textural feel of the actual product is very different, as opposed to rabbit, as opposed to lamb, as opposed to all of them. So, and it's funny when people are like, well, what do they taste like? And I said, well, it's almost like saying, what does lamb taste like? And how is that different from beef? Like, do you use the word gamey? Do you use rich? Do you use pungent? Like, I think the vocabulary to describe is difficult. I think it's a textural thing and it's a flavor thing, but I think that richness that it adds to dishes is pretty interesting. I've even used it with a sweet savory waffle, and I think some crumbled black pudding just gives that cool depth of flavor with a whole wheat waffle. It becomes a serious meal.
Wow. So brunch at your house next week, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, let's take a short break, and we'll be right back with Taste Matters.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef. Pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
And we are back. This is Taste Matters. I'm Isabella Ochick. My guest is Chef Brad Farmery from Public and Double Crown and various other ventures to come. We'll get to that later. Thank you for joining us. And in case you can't call and in case you can't email, you can also tweet if you have a question or a comment to Taste Matters HRN. That's the handle. So we're back. We're talking about blood, cooking with blood, consuming it in various dishes. We've touched upon the fact that really it seems like there are a vast number of cultures around the country, around the world, that use it both for nutritious purposes, to kind of use every last bit of the animal, whatever that animal is. And certainly historically, there's some history about the preparations of these dishes. Brad cooking has come to be known for some of these dishes that he's cooking and presenting at his restaurants, teaching other chefs. I don't think there's such a vast community of chefs knowledgeable and experienced. So he's kind of the go-to guy. Let's talk about, eating these kinds of dishes, getting access to these kinds of dishes in the U.S. I imagine, the first impression is it's kind of a squeamish topic. You think about blood, you think about, seeing your own blood and fainting, or you think about vampires, or you think about gory kind of scary movies. And now, that's the background. Now we want to think about delicious, inviting, homey dishes that just comfort you. And those two ideas seem totally at odds. So let's talk about, is it a taboo in this country? Is it hard to get a consumer to order these kinds of dishes? I mean, you're in a restaurant business, so you are presumably wanting to provide dishes that are reflective of your philosophy, of your background, but also things that people will buy because you're in a business after all. So what's been your experience and impression so far with the dishes you're offering? What's been the customer reaction? Are you encouraged? Are you discouraged? Kind of let us know what's going on that front.
I'm definitely encouraged. I think that seeing, especially in the last few years with charcuterie coming really into a little bit more of the mainstream, people are looking at meat and sausage and terrines and things in a different light. So I think that that's brought a lot of new awareness to blood. I think in Public especially, people, I'm lucky because people go there to get something different. They're not going there to get what they could make at home. And so I think as soon as I think it's like abandon hope, all ye who enter. I think that they
go with the flow.
Yeah, it's sort of like, all right, man, I'm gonna eat whatever you give me. So I think that as a chef, I'm very lucky to have kind of set up that system from the beginning. And I think that, at Public, it definitely sells. It will never be our number one seller, but at brunch, we out of 200 customers, maybe about 15 are buying blood sausages, and 10 or 12 are buying the blood waffles, as they're known. So we are getting people that enjoy it, and they come back week after week for it. So it's fortunately, it's not something that they try once. I think that we're on the road to making believers out of everyone.
Mm-hmm. I think the key is really to, you're doing it in waffles. It's such a quintessential, approachable food. Mm-hmm. It certainly, makes you think really wonderful thoughts. So I think it's smart to deliver it in a way that someone is likely to try it. Mm-hmm. And if it tastes good, ultimately it comes down to that. If it's delicious, if it's among friends, if it's in a great environment with great service, then I think you're likely to try it again somewhere else, in a different format maybe.
Yeah, I think with all of these unusual ingredients or offal or blood, I think getting it in front of people is the number one hurdle in getting them to enjoy it, because I think that people don't necessarily always want to go out on a limb. They want something, like you said, they know is comforting. And so I think as you said, working it into something that's maybe more acceptable is the way to get them to try it.
What was your cook's reaction? How are your cooks reacting to working with blood? Is it exciting for them? I mean, you're in the kitchen, they're learning, you're their guide. What's that been like?
I think that's half the reason they work for me. I think that so many young cooks have come in because they want to learn how to use these unusual ingredients and how to prepare offal and game and blood included. And I think that, you know, they're basically lining up to help with these projects, which is great, mm-hmm. because, you know, you get to pass that information on to that next generation. And I think that the way that we handle blood and again, these more unusual ingredients, I think we treat them with such high regard. And I hope that that's the message that gets passed on more than anything else, that, mm-hmm. that this is such an amazing ingredient that's sustainable and helps to use the whole animal and nose to tail, and that all of these things should be considered when making a menu. It's not just, you know, hey, I like bacon.
Right.
I think it's about, you know, it's a more, I guess, an umbrella philosophy for cooking. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that blood could be a trend in the near future? I mean, certainly we've gone from, you know, great cooking and cooking techniques to now focusing on the ingredients and the provenance of the ingredients to this artisanal pride, a little bit of a throwback in time. I'm seeing a lot of people, both consumers and chefs and restaurateurs, kind of expressing the old-fashioned handcrafted methods. And certainly, you know, butchery is right there and using every animal part economically, but also as a point of pride and as a point to show that you can master all the different skills needed. Do you think blood is going to follow that trend?
I would love to say yes, but I will go on the record as saying blood will never be trendy. I think it's always going to be the secret handshake amongst chefs and amongst real food people. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, like as you said, there is a point of pride to using it and doing it well. And I see it on a lot of menus, but I think it's going to be tough. It would take something larger than me, mm-hmm. to make that happen. I've tried.
Right.
You know, I'm right in there. I try every day. but yeah, I think that yeah, as I said, it's a real chef thing. It's a real foodie thing, and I think it's just getting past that shrink wrapped, skinless, boneless piece of chicken.
Right.
It's tough. You know, that's a big leap of faith.
You know, to be honest, I hope blood doesn't become a trend because, you know, mishandled, it could lead to a lot of just bad food experiences.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need a bad reputation.
No, it carries its own baggage. It doesn't need help with that.
So what kind of blood are we talking about? Whose blood are we cooking with and eating?
Well, I think pig and cow, mm-hmm. tends to be the two go-tos, especially bovine blood, mm-hmm. because it's fun to say, you know. But I think because there's so much of it, there's mm-hmm. So many cows in America, and again, if you think that 5% of that weight is blood, you know, there's trying to put a use to it. Mm-hmm. I think that for me, the texture and taste is not amazing on cow blood, so mm-hmm. that's why I tend to use pork, which is equally accessible. But I think chicken, duck, a rabbit is really nice. Mm-hmm. And then some extremely obscure ones that come in the medical bags. But for testing only.
Right, not for sale.
Not for sale at any of my restaurants.
So what is the wildest kind of, you know, the biggest departure from an American palate or a Western palate dish that you've either tasted or encountered incorporating blood? Can you describe that?
I think I would say,
I mean, short of drinking it in a goblet.
Yeah, yeah, which also does happen. But I think, you know, Andy Ricker mm-hmm. is a great chef and a great friend. And he has his restaurant Pock Pock in Portland, and he just opened, fortunately, in my backyard on Columbia Street. But he does a traditional northern Isan Thai dish that's a salad made of pork, offal, and blood. Mm-hmm. And apparently there's some areas where they actually have it raw as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, I'm pretty gung-ho to try everything, but, you know, it was very unique and actually delicious.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's probably as far away from Americana as you're
right.
going to go. You know, raw pork bits and blood.
So it was raw pork bits.
Yeah.
And then how is the blood incorporated?
It's literally, it's like almost like a soupy...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Serve to bold, daring friends.
Yeah.
The dishes that chefs eat on their days off. The next article.
But yeah, I think it's also one of those things that, again, in the right hands and mm-hmm. handled correctly, it can be something really beautiful. It was just, it was an eye-opener,
right.
to say the least.
What's your favorite dish on your that you've prepared? I mean, do you have one that you just think is just really great and smart and innovative that you or your team comes up with?
I think the waffles are
yeah.
a big one. That's been a huge favorite. And again, people talk about it. People tell their friends about it. And people come in wanting to order that mm-hmm. dish. I think also because it is so damn good. So they get rewarded for their adventure. We also do a traditional Taiwanese dish that's... I guess is called, I don't know if we made up the name, but it's called pig blood popsicles, and mm-hmm. and the name alone puts fear in the hearts of men. But it's actually a rice and pork and blood mixture that gets slowly baked mm-hmm. and then deep fried, coated with chili sauce and crushed peanuts, and it's amazing.
Wow.
It's like meat on a stick times 10. You
right.
know, it's just delicious.
Well, with the Asian flavors, I'm sure, right? There's
yeah, it works.
For someone who is at home who would like to try this, do you have any advice? I mean, do you teach classes to food enthusiasts? Are there any classes out there like that you've heard about? Should they just not try to order blood and proceed on their own? Like, what would your advice be, having all this, you know, wealth of experience?
I would, you know, there's some very easy recipes to follow with amazing results.
Mm-hmm.
And I think... black pudding is a dish that it's essentially a sausage that doesn't need a casing. So you could pour the whole mixture into a terrine mold and slowly bake it in a water bath. And
mm-hmm.
and I think that technique wise, it doesn't require much. Again, the search for blood will probably either make you friends or enemies across the meat counter. So I think that that's going to, again, be the biggest hurdle. I think,
mm-hmm.
I've had quite a few of, my recipes on the World Wide Web. So I'm sure if you Google Brad Farmery blood, which everyone will do right about now, I think that you'll find a recipe that you can prepare at home.
Right. Okay. And as far as getting it for procuring blood for a home enthusiast, is that just a trip to Chinatown with a native speaker friend, or is there a purveyor that anyone can call, or do you sell any
out the back? I've had people mm-hmm. ask me, and mm-hmm. I know it's difficult, and I know that there's online sources where they'll send it to you frozen.
Mm-hmm.
Chinatown tends to be everyone's
right
best bet. So get down to Chinatown.
So one final question, maybe on the topic. I know that you're working on something in Napa, so you're going to be kind of commuting cross country for a while. Very different marketplace, wine country.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have an amazing bounty of produce, for which we are jealous here in New York. And any plans to bring some blood dishes out there? And what do you think that audience is, you know, what goes with blood? What, I mean, is it a, you know, Napa Cabernet or...
I think we're definitely looking at a fresh and clean cuisine mm-hmm. out there. And, you know, but at the same time, a great charcuterie program. So I think that blood will definitely be in the walk-in, and we'll find some ways to use it. It probably won't be as prevalent as public. You know, the blood's actually, I don't think, too tough of a sell in New York, but I think once you get... out of New York or San Francisco or Chicago, mm-hmm. maybe you might be up against a little more resistance. So I'm going to get to know my neighbors first and then get it on the menu.
Well, maybe it'll be the surprise component that
yeah.
no one talks about.
Dessert.
Till they taste it. Thank you so much, Brad Farmery. This has been delicious, bloody, bloody good, and really illuminating. I appreciate your time. Next week, our host, Mitchell Davis, is back with his esteemed guest, Matter Joffrey, talking about, you know, wonderful Indian spices and foods. This is Taste Matters. I'm Isabella Wojcik. This is HeritageRadioNetwork.com. And have a great universe, everybody. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on HeritageRadioNetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.